Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, The Buzz Cafe, Prairie Fire Glass, Any Frequency Music Store, and Off the Square Office Supplies, all housed on the same street in downtown Monticello.
This week in This American Life, in Poland, not far from the Auschwitz concentration camps, in a club filled with hip 20-somethings. But at night, the band gets to the numbers that always bring the house down. Jewishness has become so hip among young Poles that they're studying Yiddish, looking for Jewish roots. Non-Jews. Turncoats, this week.
Tonight at 6 here on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly clear with a low in the mid-40s and northwest winds around 10 miles per hour becoming light. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. The high in the lower 70s with light winds becoming south around 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The low in the mid-40s with southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour becoming northwest after midnight. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of University of Illinois alumni Alice and Robert Campbell. It's 5 p.m. Keeping the Faith with Steve Shoemaker is next.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome once again to Keeping the Faith. Glad to have you with us. Unfortunately, Steve is not here today, and I'm substituting for him. I'm Don Nolan. I'm professor of philosophy and religious studies at Parkland. And our guest today is Professor Richard Layton, who is with the Program for the Study of Religion at the University of Illinois. And our topic for today is the Bible and public schools. Welcome to the program, Professor Layton.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
The primary reason you are here is that we have a conference coming up. I believe it's Monday evening, April 24th at 6:30 p.m., entitled The Bible, Public Schools, and American Identity. And we're going to be talking about some of the issues that will be brought up during this conference. But before we get started, let me just mention this is a call-in program, and we encourage you to call in at any time during this hour to put any questions that you care to about this topic to Professor Layton. Our number is 333-9455. The 800 number is 1-800-222-9455. Professor Layton, how did you get to the University of Illinois, and how long have you been here?
Well, I've been here 10 years now. I very much enjoyed our experience here over the last 10 years. I came in 1996 when I was completing a doctoral dissertation at the University of Virginia in Judaism, Christianity, and Late Antiquity. And, you know, I guess it was my luck. It was the university's poor luck that the very, very distinguished Professor Bill Shadle had retired by that time, and it was their unhappy task to have to try to replace him, and I'm the beneficiary of that search. Since then, I've been teaching in the whole, you know, gamut of courses dealing with Christianity and the Bible here at the university, and sort of also furthering on the other side my research interest in the history of biblical interpretation. Those two have really, really gone very well together for me over the years.
Mm-hmm. What are your current research interests?
My current research interest? Well, I think I've got several things that I'm trying to pursue at one time, and we will see how well they come together. I continue just to be very, very much interested with the question of how this kind of diverse group of texts that we now call the Bible became seen by the early church as kind of a unitary text. It's a very surprising thing when you read the Bible. If you're not really prepared to expect it, you would, you know, read the book Song of Songs, and then you would read the book of Exodus, and you kind of scratch your head, what really keeps these two things together? Mm-hmm. And the answer, of course, is that you needed to interpret it. And so I'm very much interested in how the act of reading, in a way, forged the unity of the Bible that we know today. Mm-hmm.
How did you get interested in the role of teaching the Bible in a public setting?
Oh, goodness. I just have to say, I really never seriously considered teaching anything but a public setting. Public education is just a real passion for me. You know, that's not to take away from what the private schools do, but I've always really felt that I'm fed the most by students in the diversity you get at an institution like the University of Illinois. And I also feel like I perhaps have the most to give them in return. So I've never really thought about any other kind of setting.
Certainly in this country, the Bible is perhaps the most contested book to teach in a public setting. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think that, you know, why not? Let's say yes. The way I put it in my class is that it's the book that matters most to students. And so I really welcome that kind of contestation simply because it's clear to me when students are upset with me, which sometimes they are, or they disagree with me. I can just see them shaking their heads in the back of the class. That it's clear to me that they're doing that because it matters. You know, I just really haven't encountered the cultural war over the Iliad in the last 10 years. Sorry, my colleagues in classics, I love what you do. You know, it's clear that that's something that touches deep into the nerves of our students. And it is very, very interesting that it's a very culturally embedded nerve. Mm-hmm. It's not just something that students accidentally come upon. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
The subject of this conference is the role of Bible in public schools and American identity. And I understand that you, along with Professor John Abel, who is a colleague of yours, has organized mm-hmm. this conference. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, in fact, I should have John sitting here. He did most of the heavy lifting in putting together this event. And we're very, very excited. Really looking forward to tomorrow night to encourage anyone who's at all interested in either the Bible or the public schools. And I can't imagine someone who's not interested in one of those two topics to come by. It's going to be at the Levis Faculty Center in the reading room at 6:30 tomorrow night. And we have a panel of three very, very qualified speakers to address different aspects of this issue. This symposium is kind of coming at the end of a year-long study that John and I and some of the graduate students in the School of Education have been involved in. And as we've gotten deeper and deeper into this issue, what has just really amazed us is how many kinds of issues are connected to what seems like a fairly simple question. Can we teach the Bible in the public school, or should we teach the Bible in the public school? As soon as you ask that question, you open up tons of other questions. And so we've got a wonderful panel to sort of help us through at least three of those.
Just to make clear, by public school, you don't mean a public university. You mean
absolutely
high school, middle school?
We're talking about high school in particular. We're looking at there are two nationally marketed curricula that present themselves as suitable for middle or high school, but very clearly the majority of students would be 11th and 12th grade students in public mm-hmm. high schools in school districts across the country.
Well, why don't we talk about those two curricula, and then we'll come back to some of the questions that you hope to raise in the conference. What are the two curricula that are most widely promulgated around the country?
Okay. First, I'll identify them, and then if I have the opportunity, I'll kind of backtrack a little and give you some of the history behind each of those two curricula. The two curricula, and they're very much intensely competitive rivals with one another right now, are, first of all, the National Council for Bible Curriculum in the Public Schools, which has the very unfortunate acronym NCBCPS. It's a Greensboro, North Carolina-based operation, which has been promoting its own teacher's guide for teaching the Bible in public school settings since 1993. The second one is called the Bible Literacy Project. And this is a consortium that has come together starting in about 1999, drawing together, I believe, more than 20 denominational groups, plus some very important representation from the First Amendment Center in Nashville, Tennessee. And since 2005, they have been actively marketing their kind of alternative textbook here called The Bible and Its Influence. All mm-hmm. right. Just to give you some of the statistics, it's very, very difficult to track down how widely spread either one of these curricula actually is. The Bible Literacy Project claims now to be under consideration by 800 schools mm-hmm. across the United States. And
specific schools.
Yes. That's the claim. We haven't really been able to confirm that or understand exactly what it means to be under consideration. The alternative one, the National Council curriculum, puts on its website that I believe that they are in use in over 300 school districts, which may be multiple high schools throughout the United States. So those are the two kind of rival curricula. Now, the history behind this, and to understand why these two curricula are such intense rivals, you really need to know a little bit about the history here. Up until about 1963, the Bible was read in a lot of public schools in a devotional manner. And that is, the high school day often would start with a brief reading from the Bible. It would be uninterpreted, but it would be simply a devotional reading to kind of set the tone for the day. This was challenged by a family in Pennsylvania.
I'm old enough to remember doing that.
Oh. I'm pretty old, too, but I don't remember it either. But I was probably asleep during that portion of the day, I guess. But, now, as a result of this court challenge in 1963, the Supreme Court issued a decision which declared the devotional reading of the Bible unconstitutional, but at the same time opened up that it was quite possible to teach the Bible constitutionally from what they called a neutral perspective. And Don just handed me a wonderful quote from Justice Clark in there, that it might well be said that one's education is not complete without a study of the history of religion and its relationship to the advancement of civilization. Nothing we have said here indicates that such study of the Bible or of religion, when presented objectively as part of a secular program of education, may not be affected consistently with the First Amendment. Now, I really don't claim to be a legal expert, but what that might mean to be presented objectively is a very, very difficult question. But at any rate, as a result of this decision, it seems that a lot of schools became disinclined to teach the Bible. And we can't know exactly why, but I'm sure that the constitutional case had a chilling effect.
Hmm.
In the late 80s and in the early 90s, the religious right in the United States started to undertake a more concerted effort to start a reform of American institutions, in their view, from the grassroots level. And it's at that, as part of that effort, that we see the first systematic effort to develop mm-hmm. a Bible curriculum. Mm-hmm. This was done by the National Council.
Let's come back to that topic of the devotional teaching okay. of the Bible. Let me just reiterate, if you would like to call in to put a question to our guest today, the number is 333-9455. 800 number is 1-800-222-9455. Hope to hear from you. You say you don't know why its reading disappeared after 1963. I'm assuming that it had something to do with removing the devotional aspect of it. That raises mm-hmm. in my mind a question. which I know you've thought about and I'm sure will be discussed, just exactly what does the word teaching mean in philosophy of education? That's also a controversial term. Teaching the Bible as God's Word versus teaching the Bible as literature and so on and so on. Do you think that that was an issue?
Yeah. I think it was at least an issue that school boards became very reluctant to touch. And it's probable that they really didn't want to get into a court fight about this. I don't think they felt very qualified to address that question on their own. It's very hard for us to tell because there weren't a whole lot of discussions about why don't we do this. It just really didn't come up.
Fear of litigation is a powerful factor.
Fear of litigation has been mentioned in several times as one of the reasons that the National Council curriculum is not more widespread than it is.
The school districts have been sued.
Yes.
Over that curriculum.
Right.
That
the National Council curriculum, again, this was the earlier one that started in 1993, was challenged in court in Florida. Very, very important law case in 1998. And a U.S. district court in Florida in 1998 decided that the New Testament portion of that curriculum was indeed unconstitutional. Before they had a chance to rule on the Old Testament, and that's what they call it, by the way, and they call it the Old Testament portion of that curriculum, the school board withdrew the curriculum and settled with the plaintiffs so that there has been no kind of legal decision on the curriculum as a whole. But since then, National Council has become somewhat defensive, and their lawyers have at several points indicated that they've been worried about litigation.
I noticed that the Bible Literacy Project has a fund, a legal defense fund, which I found remarkable.
Well, I don't think they really need it. They have been very well advised from the get-go. The Bible Literacy Project emerge as a kind of marriage between a Wall Street financier and a think tank in Nashville called the First Amendment Center. It's also related to something called the Freedom Forum. And the main point here has been run by a guy named Charles Haynes, who is very, very kind of widely published in this field. And they've considered this all very, very carefully. So I don't think they have any constitutional concerns.
My impression is that it was to allay concerns and fears on the part of teachers who might be reluctant to
teach
the Bible.
That's correct. And very specifically, as a response to the court challenges that the National Council curriculum suffered, the Bible Literacy Program or Project, I believe, wants to offer a constitutional alternative to the National Council curriculum.
So do you wish to offer an assessment of these two programs in case someone here in community might be interested?
Oh, I'd be delighted to talk about both of these curricula.
One more time, just to reiterate, our number is 333-9455 if you'd like to call in, 800-222-9455.
Yes, and also to remind people that if they are interested in these issues, do come tomorrow night, April 24th, to the Levis Center Reading Room on the campus of the University of Illinois for our symposium.
That is 919 West Illinois Street in Urbana.
The two curricula now. I've been dying to get my hands on this National Council curriculum. It's hard to get. They keep a close watch on this. It is not something that is available in bookstores, whereas the Bible Literacy Project is you can order it via Amazon, as one of our graduate students did. I've reviewed the portions of the National Council curriculum that are available as samples online and looked over their table of contents. And I can say that from that, the aim of the National Council curriculum seems to be to show two things. One, that the Bible is objectively historically reliable as it recounts the events of the ancient past. And secondly, that, and this seems to be a related item in their view, that the Bible is a foundational document to American society and particularly to American government. And it's related, kind of another part then of a movement in conservative religious circles to break down what they consider the unjust separation of religion and state. And that seems to be the two aims that I can deduce from the portions that I've been able to see, and I'd like to see more of it.
Just to pause a second, mm-hmm. The first one, that the Bible is objectively reliable as an account of past events.
Mm-hmm. That is, the Bible is a history book.
That's to be that's distinguished from literalism or inerrancy.
And from what I can tell, they don't promote explicitly a view of biblical inerrancy. But I'm certain that you're right. That's a presupposition to the way that the material is presented.
Okay.
I should add that an interesting wrinkle to that curriculum is that they don't have a textbook. They propose that the textbook for their class should be the King James Version of the Bible, itself something that is just so loaded with baggage that it's a really remarkable contention. And that what they sell is not a textbook, but a teacher's guide to instruct teachers on how to work through this material. And they start with Genesis and they just work historically through without much regard for the kinds of layers of narrative within the Bible. The second curriculum, the Bible Literacy Project, I believe that they have several aims. One is, and they put this right in their preface, that this is to be a constitutionally sound approach to the study of the Bible. They even quote the Abington case, this 1963 case, right in their preface of the textbook. And they seem to have a view that what that constitutional case requires is that the Bible be studied, quote unquote, as literature, which they distinguish from studying the Bible as a sacred text. This is a distinction that I find entirely unclear. To be a sacred text doesn't make it any less literature. Mm-hmm. To be literature doesn't necessarily make it unsacred. To study something as sacred doesn't mean that you are buying into it. We can study the Quran as a sacred text without committing ourselves to the perspective of the Quran. So I'm very, very unclear of that distinction that they're making there. But that's one aim that they state. The second aim seems to be to appeal to the understanding of the Bible as a classic of Western civilization. And they make the claim that the Bible has been extremely influential in shaping Western society, and therefore that one is uneducated unless one has a full understanding of the Bible. And they give this even kind of more teeth in their view. I think it's sort of a carrot and stick approach, that people do better on the SAT and advanced placement exams if they know the Bible. And as I tell people, my favorite little pull-out box in this textbook is where they list all the biblical allusions that are on the English AP exam. Mm-hmm. So the appeal there, I would say that these two curricula appeal to two very different aims that people have. Mm. National Council, I believe, is very much appealing to a notion of America as a culturally Christian country, and that that this is foundational to a moral sense of American identity. Mm-hmm. The BLP, the Bible Literacy Project, is appealing much more to kind of an elite individualism in American culture. Well, that you are going to succeed and get ahead.
If you know these allusions and these references, right. Then you'll succeed in America.
That's correct. Yeah. And interestingly enough, the National Council has been most successful in mainly rural districts, perhaps districts that see themselves as with experiencing a kind of cultural erosion that they don't understand and can't stop. And the Bible Literacy Project, I think, is much more targeted to kind of suburban, more academically inclined schools. So that seems to be the two, curricula there.
And clearly you have reservations about both. If a curriculum director in a public school or a board of education were going to consider this question of creating, hopefully they would call it Hebrew Scriptures rather than Old Testament, and a course in New Testament in a high school, what advice would you offer them?
I'd say walk fast the other direction.
Is that right?
Yes. Don't do it. And I say that, not at all tongue-in-cheek and not flippantly either, that John Ebel and I have been really wrestling with this question since we came to our attention in September, October. And both of us, I believe, were very eager to find a kind of curriculum that
Would work.
That would work.
Satisfy the...
Yeah, and...
Avoid the stereotypes of...
And our experience has not just given us the feeling that these two curricula are fatally flawed, but more particularly that perhaps the venture itself is a dubious one, and that school boards interested in this ought to take more time and at least consider several different other kinds of alternatives.
Well, the Bible, excerpts from the Bible are found in almost all world literature texts, I understand, and you find it frequently in English curricula.
Sure.
So it's there. It's just not as visible and
not
in
being
your face
taught as Bible.
As a separate course.
Right? Yeah. And so therefore not given the kind of validation as a single body, a corpus of literature that a course in the Bible itself offers. I would think what we're toying with, I should say that why we're doing this symposium is because we're interested in this issue itself, and we're not trying to say we've got our final conclusion on this matter. But what we've seen of these two textbooks has given us the feeling that school boards are not entirely going about this in a systematic fashion, and there's other alternatives that they ought to think about.
What else is new? We have a caller here. You're on Keeping the Faith. Your question?
Hi. It seems to me, I don't know if I can formulate this in a question, it seems to me that if a organ of the state like a school is going to teach religion, that it would have to start with some basic ideas about the Bible and the Gospels as, you know, historic documents from an oral tradition. This Gospel according to Judas that's just been sort of verified and translated from the Coptic, though I guess it was originally written in some the Greek of the times, illustrates to me that the canon, you know, as defined later, sort of freezes the gospel in time. Attitude towards, I personally think that it's arguable that there wasn't, in a sense, an historic Jesus, that there was a number of figures in the oral tradition that were amalgamed to make the stories that are the Gospels, the stories that are in and out of the canon. And I think that any fair approach to teaching of religion would have to include that, and obviously that's like throwing a bomb, because anybody that's going to say that in a classroom is going to be attacked. And I don't know if either of you have any regard that as an arguable point, but or not, but I see it to be the case. I mean, Zoroaster, the stories about Zoroaster, some of them are reflected and reappear in a couple of the Gospels. So I just really think that contrary to this historical Jesus movement, I think it's arguable that we'd have to at least allow that we don't know that for sure. And obviously, that's controversial.
Caller, just to distinguish, are you referring to the teaching of religion or the teaching of the Bible? Those are two separate.
Well, teaching of the Bible, yeah. You know, if you're going to approach it as a historical reconstruction of oral traditions and in the sense that I propose it, you don't have to say that's for sure, but I think one would have to allow that that's something that some people believe.
Professor Layton?
I think the caller raises two questions that I think would very much need to be explicitly addressed, in my view, in any kind of responsible Bible curriculum. One is that these books or texts aren't simply reflecting history, but they have a history. And I think that's what the caller was getting at, raising, for example, the Gospel of Judas here and the concept of oral tradition, is that these texts are not simply witnesses to history, but they are enmeshed in their own kind of historical development. And so it's very, very difficult to teach them responsibly without also teaching some sense of the growth and development of both an individual text and the corpus as a whole that we call the Bible. The second point I think that he's getting at here is that it is impossible to teach the Bible without importing some of your own presuppositions. And I think the best taught Bible courses are upfront about what those presuppositions are. And that's made me nervous about these two curricula that I've been able to examine, is that they don't put their presuppositions right out there on the table, and I'd like to know.
The language objective and neutral is used at least in one of them, and that's troubling.
I think so, because those are the kinds of code words that can, cover most anything that people want to talk about. And it's clear, I think, when we're talking about ancient texts, that the concept of objectivity is something that really doesn't apply to the perspective of the texts themselves.
Mm-hmm. Just to reiterate, if you would like to call in to put a question to Professor Layton about the topic of Bible and the teaching the Bible in public schools, the number to call is 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Just a quick announcement here before we go on with this topic. There is a event coming up on May 4th, 2006, entitled Voices of Peace, Reclaiming the Christian Tradition, which are dramatic, consist of dramatic readings of Christians advocating for peace and justice from the year 30 CE to the present day. And the readings will star individuals like Julia Ward Howe, Edith Cavell, Oscar Romero, Martin Luther King Jr., Tom Fox, Jimmy Carter, and so on. The event will take place at Community United Church of Christ, 6th and Daniel in Champaign at 7 p.m. on May 4th, if anybody's interested in this event. We have another caller. You're on line 4. Your question?
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. This is Tom Radulovic from Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Thank you.
And I do have a question. I was interested in Rick's alternative ideas, if he were thinking that teaching the Bible was not a good idea. What were some of those alternatives? And in the interest of fair disclosure, I have a history with Rick, and I happen to know at one time he used to have a pretty mean 20-foot jump shot.
Jump shots long vanished. Well, alternatives. I think there's some fairly good alternatives, and we've been exploring those as well. No alternative, I think, is going to come trouble-free, and I don't think that should be the aim either. I think one of the joys of teaching about religion is that you get to talk about troublesome things, and I don't like that schools are meant to be, if you will, offense-free zones.
Mm-hmm. Avoiding conflict at all costs.
Yes, and so I don't, that's not my aim here. I think, though, that there are a couple of things that students would be better prepared to deal with at the high school level than they are at the college level. And the first of these would just be a kind of general introduction to world religions. This fits much more closely, I believe, into some of the curricular goals of high schools, which are meant to train our children to be citizens not just of the United States, but citizens of the globe, as, you know, I don't think anybody would doubt that this is becoming something much more important to all of us. So I think that would be one course. Second course that I think I would probably be more interested in is a course of comparative world scriptures, in which the Bible could be understood in a different kind of context, not necessarily the historical context in which the text emerged, but in the context of other kinds of attempts by world traditions to define what is permanently good, true, and beautiful, and what is the wise life for human beings to follow. And in this way, we would be able to perhaps look at the Bible alongside of some of the surahs from the Quran, from the Analects of Confucius, the Tao Te Ching, and perhaps the Bhagavad Gita, and some other kind of classical ancient literatures. Mm-hmm. And I think this would be a very stimulating experience for students, to allow them to use the Bible to open up new sets of questions. And I think that would be a wonderful kind of experience.
Wouldn't that be, I mean, it certainly sounds exciting, and there are a few such courses at university levels, not a whole lot. You often see world religions across the public university curriculum. But a comparative world scriptures with a focus on ideals of the good life, my guess is that would be contested as well.
Oh, most certainly. Most certainly. And it'd probably be contested exactly by some of the people who would like to see a Bible course promoted, precisely because it would relativize the Bible. And I think it would dilute what some people see as the message of salvation in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And I would be willing to kind of make that part of the course, why we take this from, why do we make these selections from the Bible, partly because I think it exposes some of the way that in contemporary United States, we've reduced the message of the Bible. This is one of my biggest complaints with
even
the Bible
in church.
Yes, don't get me started on that. So, yes, exactly so. You're right. If I can give you, I want to come back to that first caller's comment about controversy and about keeping, sort of a conflict-free area. Religion probably is that thing that people care so much about and is so personally committed to and deeply, intensely emotional about, that they're very reluctant to subject that to critical examination by others. Mm-hmm. And I find that this is probably the biggest flaw in the Bible Literacy Project curriculum. And that's, why I think it gives you a Bible with its teeth pulled.
Mm-hmm. I understand you said earlier that you're working with college education.
On this project.
Mm-hmm. I guess this relates to my question. Teaching teachers how to teach a course like this is teaching them how to teach conflict, among other things, or how to teach it in such a way that it's understood at a deeper level, not to cause conflict in the classroom. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty difficult thing for your ordinary graduate from a school of education to learn,
so.
I should think.
I would think so, and it's especially difficult because you're doing two things at one time then. You're both trying to manage a classroom situation productively and also teach the content that is before the class at the time.
And there's so much content to teach.
And I know I find it extremely difficult to do both at the same time, yes. One of the colleagues we've been working with here is Walter Feinberg at School of Education. And Walter puts it this way. He says that that American educational theory has two great values to teach. One is respect, and one is autonomy. And the Bible programs make it very difficult to teach both of those at the same time.
These two curricula.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or any kind of, if you think about it, the Bible itself is challenging to give it the kind of cultural respect that at least some people believe it's due, while at the same time encouraging an autonomous standpoint against that respect.
So just to be precise, if you were sitting in a Board of Education room with board members and these two curricula were vying for their adoption, your advice would be?
Oh, and, you know, by the way, this is not an abstract question you're asking because we know this situation has occurred at least once in Odessa, Texas.
You're going to talk about some of these
tomorrow
night.
Right. This is not an abstract question at all. This is something that is, in fact, going on, is that school boards are trying to decide between these two curricula. And
have you been called?
I have not been called. One of our speakers tomorrow, Mark Chansey, from Southern Methodist University, in fact, has been involved in precisely these issues. He has worked with a group called the Texas Freedom Foundation or Texas Freedom Network, and has not actually appeared in court, but has been a consultant to them on this matter. And so, this is not at all an abstract question. And if I were, if any school board member, when I understand you were once a school board member, ask me this advice, I would say that both these curriculars are so flawed that we should go back to the drawing table.
Meaning?
Meaning?
Given that there are a number of constituencies in the community that wish to have it taught in some
context. Unclear on these constituencies. Let me say why. Because Bible courses are introduced by small groups of advocates rather than by the considered examination of the curriculum and its strengths and weaknesses, that it's an initiative that comes from small groups of involved parents who may not represent the community as a whole. I'll give you an example of this. New Braunfels, Texas. In December last year, December 2005, a parent group came to New Braunfels and said, we want a Bible course. So the first thing the school board did is they did a survey of in their high school. They surveyed the faculty and they surveyed the students. The students, by a vast majority, 60-70%, said they'd like a comparative religions course. The faculty, by a vaster majority, 80-90%, said the same thing. And so it wasn't clear to me that the New Braunfels experience shows that there is a great groundswell, at any rate, for Bible courses. Nonetheless, New Braunfels went ahead and accepted the Bible Literacy Project curriculum.
We have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. What's your question to Professor Layton?
Well, I was just, it's sort of a comment question. With the problems with students coming out of high school and entering college, we see that there's inadequacies in, you know, maybe a couple areas like math and science for people who are focusing on literature or vice versa for people who are focusing on the sciences. If we're having struggles, you know, teaching the sort of a core math, science, literature, and history course, why are we trying to implement a whole nother area to study which takes both a literature understanding and a historical understanding? You know, I can understand this being studied at a college level to have someone, you know, pursue a career, but they're missing some of the foundational needs of academia to study it in an academic way. And I would just like to hear you comment on, you know, do you feel like this debate is taken away from what maybe schools and high schools should be debating, or do you think it how it might enhance? Because I have a hard time seeing how a literature course in view of a, you know, a religious perspective of writing can teach students, you know, how to read and write when they're already having problems in a standard writing course or a standard history course. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think the caller raised three very, very good questions, which perhaps are connected at some level. One has to do with the relationship between this kind of course and other very pressing curricular needs. The second has to do with the kind of place of this course in the kinds of disciplines that it would draw together, literature and history. And third has to do with how you would adequately give students the skills to address all these issues. And I'll just say very briefly that I think those are all three substantive points that I think school boards should consider. New Braunfels is a very interesting case to go back to that because I was able to get the minutes of their school board meetings and things like this. And I was very impressed with the level of discussion that went forward. Parents raised exactly that first question was that we are having a hard time meeting our needs. This is going to be another huge investment of money. Each textbook costs $75. They're going to have to devote resources to teaching this that have to come from somewhere else. How do you justify this when we are falling so short on other curricular targets, specifically math and science? And the school board really didn't have an answer for that except that, well, we can do both at one time. And I don't think that that's a very satisfying answer, and I can sympathize with the caller on that.
Of course, is another set of issues that are contested here, whether or not math and science are the most important curricula. I happen to be a little biased toward the humanities, and I might be more sympathetic with the other side. But
well, I agree with that, too. It's not one that I can really walk away from, that I think what I do is extremely valuable. And I don't want to trivialize that at all. What I do get bothered by, though, is that I believe people think what we do, what you do at Parkland, what I do here at the University of Illinois, is a whole lot easier than math and science, and therefore we don't really need people who are specially trained to address these questions. I tell people, I was reading through newspaper after newspaper, I came across an article in the San Antonio newspaper. Just knocked me off my chair is that they found the person to teach their Bible course who is a seventh grade Spanish teacher. and it just blew me away.
You do what you have to do in most public schools. Tomorrow night, Professor Clancy from Southern Methodist University is addressing the topic, Another Notch in the Bible Belt, the fight over Bible curricula in Odessa, Texas. You can give us a little preview of that?
Yeah, it's a wonderful case. Oh, man. This is something where I think you get to see what is best and most problematic in American political culture right now. This is an extremely local version of the culture wars that takes place in Odessa, Texas. In April 2005, Odessa agreed that they were going to introduce a Bible course.
This in high school.
In high school, that's right. The school board approved this. And then they said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to appoint a committee to examine the curricula. Well, the presumption was that they were going to just go ahead and accept the more conservative, more constitutionally challenged one. But all of a sudden, there became a movement from other people to introduce this rival curriculum because Odessa is...
the one we were speaking of earlier.
Yeah, that's correct. The Bible Literacy Project. Odessa is also the home of several colleges, and the college faculty got very concerned about the academic level of this National Council curriculum. And so they very much kind of agitated to have a consideration of both curricula. Fascinating thing was they held a hearing. The curriculum committee held a hearing. And about 13 of the 15 people who spoke in favor of the Bible literacy curriculum. About two spoke in favor of the National Council. In December, when the school board voted, they voted for the National Council curriculum.
It has something to do with who got elected, no doubt.
It has all to do with politics and lobbying. And this is another facet of this problem that I think is another reason why I discourage school boards from jumping in there with both feet.
Yes, we have another caller on line one. Your question for Professor Layton? Hello. You're on line one?
Yeah, I have
Sorry,
a question.
Sorry, go ahead.
You keep mentioning National Council, and I somehow missed at the beginning what the National Council of. The National Council I'm familiar is of churches,
yes.
And I'm not sure that's what you're referring
right.
to. Could you clarify, please?
Be happy to clarify. It's called the National Council for Bible Curriculum in the Public Schools, and that's just too much to say every time. I can't bring myself to say NCBCPS all the time either. So it's not good shorthand, but that's what we mean by National Council here.
So now in Odessa, Texas, they've adopted the National Council's curriculum.
That's correct.
That is today's curriculum at Odessa, Texas.
Mm-hmm. I believe it that they will be starting that in fall, this fall.
I'd be surprised if there isn't a lawsuit.
There's a lot of talk about it, and I think that'd be unfortunate. Perhaps not. I don't know. My aim, I'll tell you the reason I would say it's unfortunate, is all along I think that we've been debating educational issues under constitutional tools. I don't think that's the right way to go about it.
Hmm.
I think these are educational issues, and we ought to be debating these in school boards under the right kinds of questions, like the ones that the callers, I believe, have been raising. What kinds of presuppositions go into teaching this kind of text? What kinds of other courses?
Their educational value as opposed to their constitutional muster.
Exactly so. And so anytime you move this to the legal arena, necessarily those questions get shuffled under side. And I think that makes the wound fester a little bit more.
So you'd be willing to live with some of the flaws of the National Council's curriculum in order to avoid litigation?
That's it's a question I hope that I never have to address as a parent at any rate here.
I'm sure it's an elective.
Yes, it is an elective, but electives have exactly the same constitutional requirements as required courses.
Right.
I would put it the other way. I think that if there is a legitimate, unstacked debate before a school board, most school boards are wise, and they will see. Well, that might not. I don't know.
A rare compliment
to a school board. I think school boards, when they take the time, when they slow down, when they get away from just simply responding to one kind of activist group, are very capable of addressing some of these more important curricular questions. And so I'm confident that if held up to the light of day, the National Council curriculum will wither.
Oh, you think it will fade over time?
I think it would. I think it's controversy in part that helps to fuel it.
Litigation.
I think so, because the way it's marketed is kind of under the table at grassroots political organizing conferences of the religious right, and that this is one of its in those circles. It's one of the things that recommends it.
Eric Owens is another presenter tomorrow night from the University of Virginia, and his topic is Good Citizens and the Good Book.
Mm-hmm.
I take it he's not taking the individualist route?
Look forward a lot to hear what Eric has to say. As I've progressed through looking very specifically at these curricula and just been overwhelmed by the amounts of problems, I'd like to hear from someone with a broader perspective here. He's an educational theorist and not a biblical scholar, and he will be interested in the role of education in forming good character. And I look forward to hearing what he thinks a Bible course could do in that light.
And your third speaker is Winifred Fallers Sullivan. Mm-hmm. She's going to speak on litigating the Bible, mm-hmm. remembering the Cincinnati Bible Wars.
Yes, yes. Remarkable thing. This, in a way, comes back to something you raised at the very outset of this discussion this afternoon, is that what is the line between what is religious freedom? How do you actually achieve something that is neutral with respect to religion? And Winifred Sullivan has investigated this from a legal standpoint, and her book is called The Impossibility of Religious Freedom. And she's going to remind us that this kind of culture war is not new, that it was precisely the fight, the attempt to introduce the King James Bible in Cincinnati that caused major controversy mm-hmm. in the 19th century.
And precisely why was it? Had something to do with Protestant Catholic?
Protestant Catholic, mm-hmm. yes.
King James, if you
want
to
clarify.
Is a Protestant
Bible.
Right.
Yeah. And so it seems to me the National Council curriculum, as we said, mandates the King James version, which is just by that very
act
is instituting a Protestant view of society. By the way, again, to show that this is not an abstract thing, there is a bill pending in the Alabama legislature that would mandate a Bible course based on the King James Version of the Bible.
Mm. Amazing. Just to back to an earlier topic, this issue, the Bible literacy curriculum, is that the name of the project?
Yeah.
Has a rather provocative quote where they use it as a... as an illustration of the need or the case, as they call it, for biblical literacy. Mm-hmm. And they quote from Dr. Martin Luther King right. Jr., where he says, I've seen the promised land and I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And they go on to argue that these last words of his would not be understood by most, I assume, 90%. The biblical allusion would not be understood by 90% of today's students. Do you buy that claim, and what is the importance of biblical literacy from your perspective?
Okay. Let me start with that second question first. Biblical literacy is very important. The problem with the Bible Literacy Project curriculum is it doesn't achieve it. They systematically, and I believe, undermine biblical literacy because they don't do justice to the fullness of the biblical narratives. They whitewash the biblical narratives in kind of, in my view, inexcusable ways. So they're really not promoting a serious view of biblical literacy. On the other hand, could we understand Martin Luther King's final speech there? Well, if that's your real issue, then all you do is you stop the speech there and say, well, of course he's referring back to the book of Deuteronomy when Moses in his final days.
As most high school teachers do.
Exactly. I mean, it takes 2 seconds. You don't need mm-hmm. a whole course to understand that one allusion.
So you're not as concerned about declines in biblical literacy as many people in this movement are.
Right. Biblical literacy is entirely different from biblical allusions. And mm-hmm. that's what these curricula miss. Biblical literacy is being able to understand the way the narratives work just the same way we'd understand a Charles Dickens narrative.
It strikes me that's the way to go about it with an ambivalent school board member or curriculum director is to come to terms with just how important is this issue of knowledge of the Bible in our culture. And I hope maybe tomorrow night we'll get into those. I'm looking forward to this event, and you in the viewing in the listening audience are encouraged to join in this symposium entitled The Bible, Public Schools, and American Identity. This is tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. in the reading room at the Levis Faculty Center, 919 West Illinois in Urbana. Promises to be a very interesting session organized by Professor Layton here at the university. And I want to thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you tomorrow night.
Well, thank you. It's been a delight to be here. Hope to see you tomorrow.
Thank you very much. This is Don Nolan for Keeping the Faith. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Men are not really from Mars, and women are not really from...